everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Miro, and as always, I will be your host for today's show. With me today, we have a very special guest who has come to join us from a very far away, all the way from Australia. It is David Pitch. How are you today, David?
I'm great, thanks, Miro. Now, of course, you'll hear from my accent that I don't sound particularly Australian.
We had very high expectations, especially of the accent. And again, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the podcast. And for those listening, David is the CEO of the Institute of Managers and Leaders, one of Australia's oldest and most respected professional membership-based organizations. David's leadership career spans a range of senior executive roles in sales, marketing, PR, and consulting for a number of global companies and in the not-for-profit sector. David advocates passionately for sound management and leadership practice. He strongly believes that good leaders have an impact well beyond the workplace. He is joining us today to talk about his new upcoming book and a lot of the ideas behind his work. The book is called Leadership Matters, and at the end of the podcast, we will be putting links in the description below where you can find out more about the book and where you can get your own copy. So without further delay, David, let's just get into today's podcast. And my first question for anyone joining us is, what inspired you to become an author?
Look, I consider myself in many senses to be an accidental author. So, of course, as the chief exec of one of the oldest management and leadership institutes in the world, and certainly the oldest one in Australia, I do a lot of writing. You know, I write articles for our website and our magazine and for our members, and that quite naturally turned into a belief that the Institute has to have an opinion on management and leadership. I've been the leader of the Institute for 2 years now, and the one thing I noticed was overwhelmingly the question that I get asked the most is, what is leadership? And I'm sure that some of your listeners would associate and identify with that question. You know, what is leadership? And I very strongly believe that an institute that advocates for good management and leadership needs to have an opinion and a view on what good management and leadership is. And that's what the book's about. So to put that into a book and then to proclaim that that is the definition of good management and leadership is the reason for writing the book. In order to write the book, we went to our membership and we asked them for their opinions on what good management and leadership is.
And as we're on the subject of the book, in there you talk about the 7 skills that need to be mastered in order to become a successful leader for any organization. What are they and why are they so important?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the one thing I would say is that I view leadership from two perspectives. There's something that we at the Institute call the inspiration of leadership. And that's the stuff that most people write about when they talk about leadership. I'm talking about motivation and resilience and all of those slightly esoteric and more psychological sides of leadership. And, you know, those are the things that, you know, Tony Robbins talks about and the more kind of motivational type speakers. I do think that there's a tendency when you're talking about the inspiration of leadership, the facets of leadership, that, you know, the more personal traits of leaders. I think there's a tendency for those things to induce guilt in leaders. Typically, leaders will feel that they don't measure up in many of those. You know, are we resilient enough? Are we emotionally intelligent enough? Are we authentic enough? Are we self-aware enough? The book is not remotely about that. So we decided to write a book at the Institute that wasn't about the inspiration of leadership. It's about the perspiration of leadership. It's about the heavy lifting of leadership, the tricky stuff. It's actually about the stuff that leaders need to do to be good leaders, not the things that leaders need to be good leaders. So we look at 7 skills that leaders have in order to be good leaders. They are setting strategy. So we believe that leaders need to have a vision and to have a way of approaching that vision, and that is the strategy of the organisation. A leader needs to set strategy. The next thing we believe that a leader needs to do is define culture. So once you've set the strategy, you need to define the culture that supports and approaches that strategy. All leaders, whether they run a major multinational organization or a small team or a football team or a netball team, they have to be able to set the strategy for that team. And then they have to define the culture that they need in that team in order to approach the strategy. The next one, of course, and the most obvious skill that a leader needs to have is to lead people. So leading people is the next chapter of the book. And in all honesty, we put that chapter in because it's very, very obvious. But leading people is quite often forgotten. And you can lead people not necessarily by managing them. You know, there's different ways of leading. You don't necessarily have to have direct reports. And certainly in the world of work today, I would say that there are many different ways of leading people. The next chapter of the book is making decisions. We absolutely believe at the Institute that a manager or a lead has to make decisions, and those decisions have to be based on research, different opinions, but a leader must make decisions, and those decisions have to more or less be right. And so there's a chapter that looks at the neuroscience of making decisions. The next chapter of the book is ethical leadership. We absolutely, fundamentally, firmly believe that a leader needs to be ethical, and a leader needs to have a very, very sound and strict moral compass. The next chapter of the book is all around inclusion. We've called it Inclusion Matters. We believe that a leader must lead in an inclusive way. So leaders must believe in the principles of inclusion, not exclusion. And that covers all aspects of diversity and those kind of things. And then the next chapter of the book is around networking. We believe that leaders must have and promote a very wide network. So those are the chapters of the book.
Great, very exciting. And here is a piece of wisdom for me when it comes to decision making. Don't do it when you're hungry or when you're sleepy. It is the one thing you do not want to do.
Well, interestingly, the book actually goes into those kind of aspects of decision making. And I think you're absolutely right. I think some things, you have to be in the right frame of mind to make a decision. And decision making is about considering your options and considering choices and being, let's take an example. It's very difficult to make sound decisions when you're very, very stressed.
Yes.
So you need to ensure that you have the right frame of mind and the right attitude to make decisions, and then to check back on decisions and to check decisions with people. And that's what the chapter of the book is about, making decisions. But I think you're absolutely right. It's a flippant comment, isn't it? But yeah. Absolutely right. Make sure that you're looking after yourself. You know, getting the right amount of sleep and those kind of things.
And actually, I'd like to go back to something you said at the beginning of the question before we move on. And you said, you know, what a leader shouldn't be. And you listed a few very good examples. And I would like to ask you, why do you think that people do have self-doubt? Why do you think that, you know, they end up thinking, you know, about stress or expectations way too much, and it ends up getting in the way of their vision?
Look, I think... for me, the concept of... I don't think you can detach the concept of leadership from the fact that leaders are, at the end of the day, just human, you know. And we are riddled with doubt, and we have to go through thought processes to make the right decisions. And, you know, we take to work the stresses that we have in our personal life, our home life, our social life, all of those kind of things. So I don't think there is this otherness of leadership. I think leaders are, you know, just ordinary people who are out, you know, doing things. So I don't think there's this kind of pinnacle of people that are just leaders. I think leaders are normal, everyday people who have a certain number of skills as well as personal traits. And the book absolutely believes that you can learn those skills of leadership. You can learn how to set good strategy. You can learn how to define culture, how to make decisions. And for me and for the Institute, leadership is a learning process. And I don't think you should ever forget that. I don't think any person who regards themselves as a good leader or would objectively be known as a good leader should ever think that they finish learning about leadership, because typically in leadership, something comes along and shakes your foundations or changes,
yes.
You know.
Yeah. And I think that's a very important point that you've made, and it's about our humanity at the end of the day. Mm. And I think that perhaps whether it's about corporate structures or just the way companies work sometimes, it is exactly as you say, it's very easy to forget that the person sitting opposite you, it's just another human being. Mm-hmm. And they have their own personality, they have their good days and their bad days. And being able to realize that, I think, will give people a great frame of actually understanding a part of leadership, which you can say is... it's a bit harder to penetrate sometimes. But moving on, in your research for the book, you have gone through many organizations, many people, and you have a diverse opinion from every single one of them. But were there any leaders or organizations that actually ended up displaying the skills that you just told us?
Yeah, sure. So when we wrote the book, we decided, first of all, we wanted it to be a practical guide to leadership. Now, of course, each of the chapters does take a slightly theoretical view. I think, you know, there are theoretical ways that you can set strategy and make decisions and define culture and those kind of things. But we didn't want the book to be a book of theory. We wanted it to be a book of practice. And we also wanted it to be a book of experience and storytelling. And I believe, and the Institute believes, that leadership is about telling a story. And in people's stories, you can learn things. So we decided to interview 10 global leaders for the book. And in deciding who the 10 leaders were, we of course wanted to match the leaders to the chapters, the 7 skills of very successful leadership. And we also wanted to do something else. We didn't want to pick the obvious. And I think it's very, very easy these days to, you know, as soon as you start talking about leadership, you rush off to Silicon Valley.
Yes.
And, you know, you go along to Netflix and to Spotify and to, you know, all those big companies out there. But the fact is that good leadership and sound leadership practice is happening everywhere. And so we did a few things that I would consider to be a little bit different. So, for example, we went to India and we interviewed some leaders in India. We went to China and we interviewed some leaders in China. We did, of course, interview a couple of leaders in Australia. So, for example, we interviewed Alan Joyce, the chief exec of Qantas. But we tried to do something a little bit different and look at leadership from a different perspective. And in doing that, I think we offer a slightly more global perspective in the book. And I think we illustrate that good leadership is found everywhere. I'll give you a really good example of that. So we interviewed Adi Godrej, who runs the Godrej Group of companies, or Godrej Industries in India. And we wrote to Mr. Godrej, and he immediately replied and said, yep, I'm happy for you to come along and interview me. He runs a multi-billion dollar conglomerate of organizations in India, and he gave us a tour around his offices in Delhi. And quite frankly, we could have been in Silicon Valley in California. I mean, there are good leaders running good organizations with great cultures and good strategies who are willing to talk about leadership and their leadership journey in all kinds of places. And that was really, that is really something that comes across very clearly in the book. So, for example, whilst we were in India, we interviewed Kailash Satyarthi. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2015. And we talked to him about ethical leadership. And he has really created a movement against child slavery, and particularly child slavery where it impacts big conglomerates in the textile industry, for example, where companies were perhaps in their supply chain, child labour was being deployed. And he talks about individual activism and ethical leadership from a personal perspective. So at the very core of his argument is, don't go and buy clothes where the supply chain involves children. And I think that's a really interesting aspect of ethical leadership, and we found that in India, you know. So I don't think I think the book is a global book on leadership. It's not just picking, you know, Richard Branson. We all know he's a good leader.
Yeah.
It's not just picking the CEO of a West Coast of America organization.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And I think his advice absolutely stands. And you are able to speak with your wallet, as they say sometimes.
Absolutely, yeah.
And As we're on the topic of globalization, I think the one thing that really sticks out for me personally is the culture. And as we become more connected, whether it's through technology, through our new appliances, you know, mobile devices, I mean, I think it's quite amazing that you can get in your office, get behind the desk and speak to someone on the other side of the world nowadays without any issue at all. And you even have an option of the types of software and types of way you want to do it, whether you want it to be visual and audio. But the one thing that does not change is the culture of those places, and we're all unique in that way. So my question to you is, what is the difference between global leaders when it comes to their approach to culture in regards to globalization?
Yeah, sure. Oh, look, I think the lesson that I certainly learned in writing the book, and I hope it comes across when people read the book, is that the traits of good leaders, the skills that good leaders need and good leaders display, in a sense transcend culture. And, you know, you go along to, we went along to China, for example, and I interviewed Gloria Ai. And Gloria runs a daily business show that has reach of about 200 million. She has about 200. She presents live on new media channels to about 200 million people. And when I spoke to her about leadership, she talked about the same kinds of things as when I sat in, I sat with Alan Joyce at Qantas, the chief exec of Qantas, and they both spoke about very, very similar things. You know, there was a young female presenter on a television show talking about exactly the same traits as an older guy who's running a multinational conglomerate airline, you know. And they were talking about exactly the same skills and traits of good leadership. So I think good leadership practice and sound leadership transcends culture in a way, you know. And if you were standing in the head office of Godrej Group of Companies in India, in Delhi, and watching the people come to work and touring the offices, and we spoke to the Godrej head of sustainability, and they have a sustainability program called Good and Green. It was no different from talking to the leaders of Qantas, or no different to talking to Transparency International in Berlin. So I think in some senses you can overplay cultural difference. I think cultural difference is, of course, very, very important, and organisations must reflect the culture that they are in. But these days, if you're working for Qantas in the head office in Sydney, your customers are all over the world, and you have to recognise that and ensure that your strategy and your culture includes that. So I do think globalisation and internationalism is breaking down some of that cultural, some of the cultural barriers, and I certainly think that the traits of good leaders are pretty constant.
Great, and actually, my next question is, might be a bit of almost a devil's advocate, but what do you think is the standout point of Australian leadership in particular today?
Oh, look, I think as you can tell from my accent, Miro, I was born in England. I've been in Australia for 20 years. And I think there's something in Australia that that does stand out in leadership. There's certainly this sense of fairness and equity in Australia. I don't think that this is missing in other places, by the way. But I'll give you a really good example of this in the writing of the book. I sent an email to Alan Joyce, the chief exec of Qantas. I emailed him directly, and within 2 hours of me sending the email, he'd replied back to me and agreed immediately to the interview. I think there's a certain sense of equity and approachability of leaders in Australia that perhaps isn't the case in the US or in the UK. I don't know. What's your opinion on that?
Oh, I would say in the UK, you'd be lucky to even get an automatic reply sometimes when it comes to these things.
Yeah, look, I don't. In actual fact, I didn't interview any of the big corporate leaders in the UK. But from my time in Australia, I think there's a sense of equity and fairness. There's a concept in Australia of the fair go. There's this idea that, look, it comes from the history of the country, of course. And I think there's a sense of fairness and equity, and certainly there's an ability, I think, in Australia to communicate at different levels of organisations much more easily and much more openly than perhaps I experienced in the UK. Having said that, I've not been in the UK for 20 years, so that may have broken down a little bit. But certainly in Australia, and it could, of course, be to do with the fact that the Institute of Managers and Leaders in Australia is extremely reputable, and people want to talk about management and leadership and are very proud to talk about their management and leadership. But I do think, I think in general, Australian managers and leaders have a sense of fairness and openness that perhaps is a bit lacking in some other places.
Right. And my final question for you is the one I asked to our older guests on the podcast, and is, what are you currently reading?
Oh, well, I've been reading my own book for about the past 3 months. I keep finding little errors and things you want to change. Okay, so that's a great question. So I've recently finished two books. I just read Simon Sinek's Start With Why, and I was very lucky enough to interview Simon when he was in Australia recently. He did a speaking tour of Australia. And so I've read his book, Start With Why, which I'd recommend to anybody who's at a crossroads in their career or wondering what the heck to do in their working life. And then I also, on a more personal note, have a bit of an obsession with reading autobiographies. And I've recently finished Bruce Springsteen's autobiography, Born to Run. Why? I kind of like Bruce's music. But I also think there are lessons in leadership from unusual sources, if you like. And the takeaway that I had from Born to Run was the absolute burning commitment and dedication that Bruce Springsteen had in music. And I think there's something in that for us, you know. He set his sight on his goal at a very, very young age, and he was utterly committed to that goal. And I think there's something in that for leaders.
Yeah, actually, it's a very interesting point, because when it comes to the arts, you know, whether they are performing arts or even sports, I think this is becoming a very sort of up-and-coming topic of discussion, and that is, what can business leaders actually take away from people who work in those fields, who are involved in those fields? Because the level of, as you say, commitment, teamwork, dedication, and results at the end of the day are all just as important as each other. And if you compare the two, you find a lot of similarities between the business field and arts, sport. And I think that's a fascinating connection that we're coming up with.
I think, interestingly, you know, if you take the seven skills of very successful leaders that the book goes into, I think the book is obviously written from much more of a business perspective. But I think you can take those seven skills, and I think they're absolutely transferable to other areas of life. And I think that's the interesting thing about leadership. The vision of the Institute of Managers and Leaders, the organisation that I'm privileged enough to lead, the vision is creating better managers and leaders for a better society. And you started off by saying that my passion is leadership and the impact of leadership at work and its impact on society. I think that's absolutely right. I think good managers and good leaders have an impact that goes far beyond the workplace. And that impact is seen in family breakdown. It's seen in the skills that we take to other areas of our life. It's seen in mental health. So I'm absolutely passionate about seeing the impact of good management and leadership in the workplace because of its impact in society. And I think those seven skills that the book covers are transferable outside of the workplace into sport, into music, into all of those other areas of life.
Yeah, and actually it's a very interesting discussion as well, because recently we were privileged to have a guest who actually talked about the accountability of businesses when it comes to beyond the workplace, just as you say, and how these skills can then be applied not just to shareholders perhaps or people involved in the business, but to the local community, to families of the employers, to the environment, to sustainability. And I think once we fully wrap our head around how we can use, you know, the seven skills to their full advantage and apply them in all those areas, we can get to see some absolutely amazing results.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think leadership and management is far too often boxed as a workplace thing. And I think those progressive organisations and progressive managers and leaders are realising that what happens in the workplace impacts life outside of the workplace. And we've all experienced the impact of poor management and leadership. And we've all, when you walk out of the office at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the evening, you don't leave behind the impact of what happened
of
in the
day.
Office.
Yeah, absolutely.
You take that home with you. You take that home to your families. You take that home in your head from a mental and emotional perspective. And I think good managers and good leaders recognize that their impact is felt far beyond the workplace. And far too few managers and leaders, the poor managers and leaders, recognize that.
Yes, absolutely. And with that, I would like to thank you very much
it's
for joining us.
It's a cheery note to end on, isn't it?
Well, I'd say it's a cheery note indeed, because it hopefully to our audience, it will make you think about applying the skills to the book, and hopefully you can pick up your copy and you can read about how you can help the transformation happening globally. But once again, thank you very much for joining us today, David, on the podcast. And for those listening, if you would like to know more about the Institute of Managers and Leaders, of course all links in the description will be below, where you can find more about the book, more about David and the Institute's work, and all other affiliated links. Once again, thank you very much for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you on another episode of LID Radio.